Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to the Dr. Deborah and Therapist Kelly Show, only on LA Talk Radio.
And welcome. This is Therapist Kelly. Dr. Deborah is on vacation, but we have a huge, awesome surprise. We have Ian Oliver with us today. Welcome.
Thank you. It's such a pleasure to be here again.
So cool. Then we'll get the male perspective because there's like a lot of estrogen with Deborah and I. So like now we'll get a little bit of the male energy going.
With pleasure.
So if you're just tuning in, our phone number is 323-203-0815, and you can check us out on Facebook on the Dr. Deborah and Therapist Kelly Show. Our Twitter account is at DocTherapist1. Our website is docandtherapist.com. We have an amazing guest today. His name is Terry Real. He is a couples and relationship expert, and we'll talk a lot about that. I want to do a little recap of last week's show. Really, really cool. We had Susanna Brisk, who is a sexual intuitive. And before the show, Ian said, "What is a sexual intuitive?" And I thought the same thing. And so basically, she... really interesting. She kind of wants people to really open up about sex and be, I guess, more vulnerable, be more exploratory. So she meets with couples, she meets with singles, and kind of really explores what you want sexually. And she's just a hoot. She's really funny and quirky, and it was a really cool show. So if you missed that, you can check out our podcast. Again, her name was Susanna Brisk. So, all right, well, let's dive in a little bit. On relationships, because that's going to be kind of our topic today. So if someone were to come to you and say, hey, what are your kind of like three, I guess, pieces of advice dealing with relationships, what would you say?
Well, of course, it does vary to some degree on what stage the relationship is in, but there are a few absolutes, none of which would probably be surprising to anybody, but most of which people don't practice on a daily basis.
Sure.
The most important of which being that day-to-day commitment to communication, mm-hmm. to not allowing things to fester. And it really is a day-to-day commitment. I think one of the main reasons that relationships deteriorate is after the so-called honeymoon period, then things sort of break down. They don't talk every day. They don't see each other every day. And really the key to keeping the honeymoon period perhaps indefinitely mm-hmm. is, in fact, to commit to doing those great things every single day. So if you do that, I think you have a chance to really have the kind of relationship we all want.
Sure. That makes total sense. Yeah, it is
simple,
sort of
but difficult for people to actually do.
Absolutely. Well, I think you get comfortable. That's what happens. You're like, you got the person. We're good, you know? But
right.
I think especially women, we really miss that. We miss those romantic gestures in the beginning when, you know, we're getting
the
courted.
Flowers,
yes,
and the chocolates. And those should
so
never
much.
Stop.
I know,
and
right?
one of the things I tell my male clients is even if you have to put in a reminder.
Yes.
Even if it's not coming naturally like it does in the beginning, just keep sending the cards.
Yes.
Right? Send the chocolates, the flowers.
That's a great piece of advice.
Never not look good for your partner. You
exactly.
know how later on people start like, you know,
yes.
being sloppy? You should always be look good for your partner, no
yes.
matter if it's 20 years or 2 days.
That's such
simple
a good
simple things,
piece of advice.
But make a huge difference.
Yeah.
Because it actually shows the respect that you have for the relationship and for the other person. If you start looking like a slob, what are you really saying? What kind of message are you sending? You're
so
saying that
true.
The relationship is no longer as big a priority as it once was.
Sure.
And it shouldn't be that way.
So are you saying like you feel like I guess we should approach relationships almost like kind of like a business partnership, like you got to keep on your game, you got to, you know, make that kind of commitment?
Absolutely. Yeah. And even if it requires making a list,
yeah,
putting a thing on the you know, by where next to your toothbrush.
Sure.
Because look, if we can commit to brushing our teeth twice a day,
that's such a good
you
point.
Can surely commit to talking to your partner at
yes.
least once or twice a day.
Absolutely.
Or shaving so that you
yeah.
don't look like a slob.
So why do you think people fall short? Is it because they get comfortable? Is it because they, you know, there's resentment built up in the relationship? Like, what do you think?
I definitely think it's for those reasons, but I think it goes back even earlier kind
uh-huh.
of societally
yes.
in that we don't teach relationships.
Yeah.
We don't teach the important things like we do almost everything else.
That's a good point.
And so people learn the hard way and they make mistakes over and over
mm-hmm.
and they don't have sort of the feedback because a lot of people don't go to what I call preemptive or preventative therapy, which
yes.
I'm a huge believer in,
yeah.
to really bolster their knowledge, their tools, and their abilities
yes.
to be good in a relationship.
Yes. It makes
and
sense.
So what happens is that people end up getting into crisis, and then they go into couples counseling when they're already
right.
deep into crisis, and then you're so deep in the hole that your chances of recovering are so
absolutely.
Slow.
So we're going to hear more with Terry Real, who I'm going to read his bio real quick before he pops on the line. So Terry Real is a nationally recognized family therapist and author, particularly known for his groundbreaking work on men, his work on gender and couples. In 1997, he published the national bestseller, I Don't Want to Talk About It, the first book ever written on the topic of male depression. He's been in private practice for 30 years, and he's the founder of the Relational Life Institute, where he teaches therapist trainings and workshop for couples. And he can be found at terryreal.com. And here he is. Welcome, Terry.
Hey, how you doing?
Good. How are you?
I'm okay.
So we're super excited to have you. Before you got on, we were talking a lot about relationships, and I feel like you are
Yes,
the expert on this topic. So we're really, really excited. So I guess I was just going to say, I'm going to dive right into it because I feel like, I have a million questions. But
me too.
Yeah, exactly. So I guess what do you feel, because you see this all the time, is the biggest challenge facing men and women today in their relationships?
Well, I think the biggest challenge is that across the board, this is a big generalization, but across the board, women these days want more emotional intimacy from their guys than most boys and men are raised to deliver. It's part of the traditional masculine role that you are invulnerable. The more invulnerable you are, the more manly you are. And women want emotional vulnerability from men. On the other hand, with younger folks, when the man does step into increased vulnerability, some younger women are sure that that's so sexy and that they really like that. Mm-hmm. So it's very hard to be a man these days.
Yes.
We're getting mixed messages about what a good husband is supposed to look like. But by and large, women want more from men's hearts than most men are open to give.
Gosh, I can so see that. Do you think that's true, Ian?
I definitely agree. And then that dynamic undermines what we were talking about earlier, which is that importance of communicating every day.
Sure.
Right? Because if you start feeling defensive or you start not knowing how to be, then it's harder for you to commit to communicating, to not let things fester and things like that. Do you agree?
I agree. Teaching a man to be vulnerable and communicate his feelings like sad. Men will do anger and lust, but fear, sadness, regret, worry, any of those more vulnerable feelings, I like to say it's kind of like trying to give a cat a bath. It's just like we're socialized as boys to that those feelings are weak and that we're not supposed to indulge them. And that's exactly the kind of thing that women want to hear from us and connect with us around. So there's a real role disjuncture between what we learned as boys and what's being expected of us now as men. And it's difficult for both sexes.
I can totally see that. So before you came on, I was talking about your bio, and can you give us a little bit of, I guess, some I don't know, maybe a summary of your new book, The New Rules of Marriage, what you need to know to make love work. Maybe you can give us kind of a summary.
Well, it's really an operating manual. It really is about how to make love work, and I talk about, at the beginning of the book starts with good self-esteem and boundaries, good psychological boundaries. Those are skills you need inside yourself. And then it's the basics, how to speak with love, how to stand up for yourself and be loving at the same time, how to listen with openness and generosity and respond well, how to cherish your partner, how to repair things when things go off the rails, how to get back on the horse. Really the fundamental skills that our culture doesn't teach us that we need in order, you know, we've never wanted more from relationships than we do right now.
Wow.
We want long walks on the beach and heart-to-heart talks and great sex into our 50s and 60s and 70s. We want to be lifelong lovers, but if you want to be that ambitious, you have to have matching skills. And this book is about those basic skills.
Oh my gosh, it's so true. So you're saying in all your 30 years of practice, you feel like we are wanting more from relationships now than before?
Absolutely. We're wanting more from relationships now than we've ever wanted in the history of relationships.
Wow.
You know, marriage was not built to be passionate and intimate for decades. It was just built to be you're good companions, you do the job well, you raise your kids, you pay your taxes, that's enough. But nowadays, we want real lovers for our whole... We want people who connect with us, people who are sexy, people who make us feel alive. Mm-hmm. And distance is the number one problem that people come to couples therapy with. We're too distant. We don't communicate. We've fallen away from each other. And that's the opposite of where you need to go. I talk to my couples about what I call fierce intimacy, getting real in your relationships, telling the truth to each other, taking each other on, saying, I really don't like this when, and better yet, I would like it better if you would do it this way rather than that way. The problem is that people stop taking each other on because it doesn't go very well, and it doesn't go well because you're not doing it well. The art is what I call speaking the truth with love. Can I give you an example of that?
Absolutely.
Yeah, this is a friend of mine, Alan Sabodnick. Long story short, I was mad at him one day. We were at his house for a barbecue, and my kids, his kids, and I can get hot under the collar, and I discharged on him. Mm-hmm. And here's what he said to me. You ready? He said, Terry, the first thing I want to tell you is that I love you. You're one of my best friends. You're going to be best friends till the day I die. What I'm about to say has nothing to do with that. Now, you just brought a kind of anger into my porch as my guest around my family that is exactly the anger I grew up with that I spent my life getting away from, and I don't like it when you bring that into my home.
Wow.
You can do what you want. I'm not going to control you, but I don't like it, and every time you do it, I'm going to let you know just how much I don't like it, which is not at all. Am I clear?
Wow.
That's telling the truth with love. And I'll tell you something. He had me with Terry, I love you.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Right.
It's like the sandwich method, you know, like sort of, you know, saying the positive thing, because it's true. I mean, I think people, you say something negative and they immediately recoil, and then it's really hard for them to be receptive versus
they can't hear.
Yeah, exactly. Versus I think that's a great way.
So what I teach people in terms of speaking out with love is start off by cherishing your partner and cherishing the relationship. Listen, I want to talk to you because I want to be closer to you, and some things need to be clear so I can stay close to you, because that's what I want, because I love you to pieces. Can you hear this?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, is this a good time?
Yes.
And then you keep it moderate, and you keep it to this particular thing. You don't throw in the kitchen sink. Mm-hmm. And then you give your partner a way of repair. This would help me feel better right now. Would you give it to me? Mm-hmm. Sometimes you get it and sometimes you don't. But that's how you speak. Now, can I tell you about how to listen?
Yes.
it's what I call relational jujitsu.
Okay.
You don't take the wave full in the face, you duck under it and come out the other side. The best way to disarm an angry partner is to give them what they're asking for.
Yes.
Lose your pride, lose your stiff neck, lose the point, forget about objective reality. Oh, honey, I'm sorry you feel bad.
Mm-hmm.
What could I do to help you feel better? Let's get out of this thing. That's called making peace. Instead of arguing and making war, which is what most people do. Well, you didn't get that right. Well, I didn't mean that.
Mm-hmm.
Well, yeah, I did it, but you have to understand that. Forget all that. I'm sorry you feel bad. What can I give you to help you feel better? Let's get out of this together, honey.
So do you?
Who sounds like that? Only my clients.
No, I was just going
to
say.
You have to learn how to sound like that.
And do you think people just... They forget that they're sort of a unit and they're in this together and they just sort of want to be right? Or why is it that people feel so passionate?
Yeah, no, I have a saying. You can be right or you can be married. What's more important to you?
That's great. That's great.
And we do forget. And I literally talk to audiences around the country and to couples about what I call remembering love. Getting centered before you open your mouth and talk to your partner in the remembrance that this is somebody you care about. And the reason why you're talking is to make things better, not to prove your point or control your partner or retaliate or express yourself, but to make things better. That's why you're talking, remembering love. And if you're not there, be honest with yourself and don't shut up. Take a walk around the block.
Yes.
Splash some water and have a little chat with yourself until you are in that centered place, and then go do it.
Terry, from a societal point of view, since obviously so many people don't have these skills that you're referring to, what can we do societally, you know, even if it's sort of a longer-term plan, to improve sort of the general skill level of both the men and the women?
Great question.
Well, I think you need to start as kids. There are more kids who know about how to fix a car than how to fix a relationship.
That's for sure.
And I think you start with boys and girls. I would love to see basic relationship classes taught in elementary school, junior high, middle yes. school, high school, and college. Like literally courses on yeah. how to speak, how to listen, how to negotiate a difference, how to have a constructive fight with each other, how to make up after a fight. I would like places where kids learn how to do this because it works better. And of course, I want everybody across America to read my book because sure. it does yes. cover this stuff. But I couldn't help myself from that little plug.
No,
but I do
true.
Believe in it.
Yes, exactly. So if you're just
you get serious about making relationships better by learning some skills, whether it's me or other programs, you understand that what you learned in your dysfunctional family probably doesn't cut it. If you want a superb relationship, you're going to have to learn how to do it better, and you open up your mind and open up a book or two or a lecture or a tape, and you learn some of these skills from someone.
Yes. So if you just tuned in, you are listening to the Dr. Deborah and Therapist Kelly Show. And today we have guest host Ian Oliver, and he's the author of Getting Back on Top. And we are speaking with guest Terry Real, who wrote the book The New Rules of Marriage. So interesting. Wow. So you call this spiritual work, and I want to know why.
Well, you can be right or you can be married. Look, this is a complicated answer, but I'll give it to you anyway. The biggest question in the kind of therapy I do, I call it relational life therapy, it's what I created, is not what's the stressor in the couple or even what's the choreography between the two of them. The biggest question is this: which part of you am I speaking to?
Mm.
Am I speaking to the adult-centered, remembering love part of you, or am I speaking to one of your triggered children?
Mm, yeah.
The fighter or the fleer? Who am I speaking to exactly? And the spiritual work is pulling yourself up out of those children, or better yet, bringing yourself into relationship with those children so that you love them. This is what I say. When one of your immature inner kids kicks up, you love them, put your arms around them, put them on your lap, and take your sticky hands off the steering wheel. Your automatic response of fight, flight, or freeze is not going to cut it. Reach for something more thoughtful, more deliberate. Breathe 11 times. Breathe into your heart. Get yourself centered. Remember the person you're talking to is not the enemy. There, mm-hmm. now. Go ahead and talk now. That's the most important skill. And moving out of that immaturity into maturity, mm-hmm. that's spiritual work. That's moving out of your ego and your pride and opening up to something larger.
So I think when people are centered, they think, oh, yeah, I could totally do that. And then in the moment, I guess, how do you coach people in that moment to sort of step back? And, you know, and I know a lot of people have tempers, and it's so hard. Once they're at a 10, I mean, they're at a 10. Mm-hmm. They can't kind of come back down. What do you do in that case?
Well, if you are overwhelmed by one of your immature states, or your partner's overwhelmed and sitting in an immature state and you're batting your head against the wall. Are you ready for this one? Tell me if it's too complicated. Ready?
Yeah.
Take a break.
I love breaks. I love breaks. I'm all about
timeouts. Take a break.
Yeah.
But you got to do it responsibly. Take a break, not a rupture. So reassure your partner you're coming back.
Yes.
Hey, look, I need 20 minutes to come down. I'm in a rage. Let me cool off. I'll be back to you. Or the short version of that is just timeout.
Exactly.
But timeout means, because you've agreed to it up front, that I'll be back in 20 minutes and check in with you.
Yeah.
So you're always checking in. You're not just storming off.
Right.
And when you're there and you're alone for that 20 minutes or hour or however long you need, talk to yourself. Reach into that little boy or that little girl that's hurt or angry mm-hmm. or feeling helpless. And it's your job to soothe that part of you. It's your job to say, okay, I'll protect you. You know, when I have a fight with my wife, Belinda, I literally take little Terry, because I've done a lot of work with my inner child, children.
Mm-hmm.
So I'll take this little boy, he's about 11, and I'll put him behind me. And between the blast of what Belinda's throwing at me and that vulnerable little boy is me, the adult, my big, strong body. And I say to that little boy part of me, look, because he's a pretty angry sucker, I say to him, look, I'll make you a deal. I'll protect you from Belinda. I'll take the blast. You don't take the blast.
Oh, wow.
But you let me deal with her because I can do it better than you can.
Wow.
And that immature part of me and I have a deal.
Yeah.
I protect him, and he lets me run my relationship. Well, one of the things I say is maturity comes when you take care of your inner children and stop inflicting them on your partner to take care of.
Right. Wow. This is
absolutely
fascinating. I love the quote, too. If it's hysterical, it's historical. Because sometimes, you know, I would tell my clients, because it's like if you are getting in that state, you have to think like, okay, what is this triggering in me? Because clearly, you know, him not doing the dishes isn't going to cause this kind of hysteria, you know?
Right.
Sorry,
I love it. That's a great quote. My version of that is there's no such thing as overreacting. It's just that the person's probably not reacting to what's in front of them.
Yes.
They're reacting to something behind them.
Yeah.
I was going
But that's just two ways of saying the same thing.
I was going to move us just briefly, perhaps, from the spiritual to the sexual, since you know, I'm the male co-host here.
Yes. Sure.
So I was just
Go for it.
There you go, right? I was just wondering if in your work with couples, how you deal with the very commonplace challenge of, you know, the sexuality getting a little bit less exciting and less fun, and whether you had some tidbits that you could share about how to keep
it. I do. And one of the things that I teach therapists is that we don't talk enough about sex in our therapy. We're afraid to bring it up. You know, I'll tell you a funny story. When the books on sexless marriage came out, I did a little like NPR, if I could say that, interview. And I must have had a hair across my butt or for some. Anyway, it was a 15-minute interview. The guy says to me, why do you think there's so little lovemaking going on in America? And I said to him, people don't like having sex with people they're mad at. And then I watched him try and fill up the other 14 minutes because that's basically all I had to say. I believe that when we stop telling the truth to each other, we stop taking each other on, resentment builds and passion dries up.
Yes.
And you don't have a passionate relationship emotionally, so why would you have one sexually? You have to get the juice back, and the juice comes from taking each other on and telling each other the truth. I call it fierce intimacy. You're fierce with each other, but you do it skillfully. The other thing that happens is that women in particular lose touch with their own pleasure. My friend Esther Perel, a great sex therapist, taught me about this. For a lot of women, sex becomes caretaking their partners. And it's just one more chore. And as a therapist, I ask women to get in touch with their own sexuality. Do you masturbate? Do you have fantasies? What are your fantasies? Like, let's unplug that dam and get some of those feelings back. Own your own sexual pleasure and your own desire, and be a little more empowered in the relationship. So those are two things that I think about.
Where does that shift on the part of the women come from, do you think? Because, you know, in the beginning there, most of them, it seems, are oriented towards their own pleasure as well as their partner's pleasure. So what do you think the dynamic is that's in play that creates that shift?
Oh, you know, a lot of men are pushy about sex in ways large and small. A lot of men are pouty when they don't get sex, or they do that male thing. I know you know this of, oh, I've been rejected. You know, no, you haven't been rejected. Right. Somebody just doesn't want to have sex with you. Calm down.
Right.
And so women feel, and women, of course, are groomed to be caretakers.
Yes.
So they lose sight of that this is for me, and it starts being something they should do rather than their own pleasure. You know, I once heard Esther Perel, my friend, who's Belgian French, say, she was up on a station, it isn't that I don't want to have sex. I don't want to have sex with you.
I love her, by the way. I absolutely love her, and I love how you two, you know, correlate on so many different things. She's wonderful.
Yeah, we have.
That's great.
We've done a lot of work together.
So, yeah, that's really, really interesting. Okay, so I have a question about couples without children and couples with children. Do you see... because I can only imagine, do you see more resentment? Do you see more strain on couples with kids?
Absolutely.
I thought so. Okay, I just want to make sure.
Hands down. Look, the open secret in couples therapy is that kids just rip the guts out of your romantic relationship.
Yes.
That cannot be overestimated. Kids just eviscerate romance, and the younger they are, the worse it is. Mm-hmm. It gets better year by year. So you have to work really hard. You know, one of the things I say is I think America is way too child-centric.
Yes.
You have a date night. Go out once a week without your friends, without your family, be in jeans, have a pizza, I don't care. But be with each other and have a good time. Go see a movie or just chill. And spend a little nourishment on the couple's relationship. Not friends, not family, not kids, but the couple. Couples' relationships are the last in the time creditor line in our busy life, and we need to put some time and energy into our romance. We need to take it seriously.
That is so true.
Yeah.
No, I mean, and it's so understated. It's so true. But yeah, I mean, I feel like it is true. I feel like we parent, because I'm in that generation. I mean, I have a 7-year-old and a 4-year-old, and I feel like I am parenting so differently than my parents parented us. I mean, I remember just dragging along to wherever my parents went. We were like the accessory. And now it's like, you know, my kids, it's like, you know, okay, where do you want to go today? And it's like, we're taking the back seat, you know, and I think there needs to be a happy middle. So yeah, it's really interesting.
Yeah, there has to be a happy middle. You know, you stick your kids in the jogger and you go for a jog. You get your kids in front of a babysitter, even when they're pretty young, and you go out for a romantic dinner with your husband or you or your partner. Or you go to a hotel once a month and be amorous with each other. You got to put some juice into it. You know, one thing I say is if you want to be lifelong lovers, you have to act like a lover.
It's true.
And one of the reasons why people stray is because the affair partner, the lover that they're attracted to, gives them all this stuff that their spouse has stopped giving them: attention, kindness, a sense of desire, I desire you, all these things that go by the boards when we get married and have kids. I want people to keep some erotic energy at play during the day. Send somebody a saucy note. Walk up to somebody and stick your tongue in there, as long as boundaries are observed.
Right.
You know, as long as they don't feel like you're not going to get thrown in the bed. But as long as it's reasonable and you're responsive to each other, be a little sexy with each other. You know what? If your spouse goes off with a mistress or a mister, they're going to be sexy with each other. So you might as well be as well. We shut our sexuality down when we marry and have children, and it's absolutely not necessary to do that. It's part of our Puritan background, and we need to rise above it.
That's so interesting. Yeah, very, very. I'm like feel like this is just fascinating to me.
It sort of brings up that other issue of keeping priorities in alignment with time allocation. You know, very often, like in my work, I'll talk to people and I'll say, what are your top three priorities? And they'll say what they are. And then I'll say, okay, so those are those top three, and how many hours a day do you devote to those top three? And there's this gigantic disconnect. I'm just wondering if you see that too. Like many people, I'm sure your clients included, will say, oh yeah, my spouse is very, very important to me. He's one of the most important things in my life. And then you say, well, how many hours a day do you devote to your spouse?
Yeah.
And it's like, oh, well, 5 minutes.
Exactly.
You know, that huge disconnect between those two things is such an important point, I think.
Yes.
Yeah.
I absolutely can see that because it's so true. I think that that is probably priority, but they're not making it a priority.
Right. Yeah. I see that, like, for example.
Well, the last chapter of the New Rules of Marriage is on cherishing. It's bigger than... it's 60 pages long. It's like three times the other chapters. And it's about taking seriously the job of cherishing your partner and cherishing the relationship and cherishing yourself in the relationship, all of which we don't do very much of in our culture. We just run on empty.
Yes.
So buy those flowers and take that time for yourself in the gym and write that nice note to your partner or appreciate something that they just gave you. Don't be so critical.
Yes.
Be praising. don't be so hard, be warm, and you can only do that if you feel like you're consistently standing up for yourself and not resenting a bunch of unsaid things.
Yeah. I want to talk a little bit about...
I want people to be more cherishing and more assertive both.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, I think that's a great, you know, way to look at it, because, yeah, you don't want to be a doormat, but yet you don't want to be critical of your partner.
Right.
I want to talk a little bit about infidelity and sort of... and how couples can get past that.
Let's do that, and unfortunately that's going to be the last question.
Sure.
I gotta go, but two-thirds of couples do get through infidelity.
Two-thirds.
It's important to understand that it takes, this is like a grief. It's like, God forbid you lose a kid. It takes years to fully get over an infidelity. You don't have to be in therapy all that long, but it fades over time, and trust comes back over time. The two questions that her partner had is, how could you do this to me, and how do I know you won't do it again? And the involved partner has to be accountable about what they did. They have to be empathic to the pain that they caused. They have to be reassuring in their behaviors when their partner gets scared they're going to cheat on them again. That's the first phase. And then the next phase is digestion. They have to understand what happened. Why did the person stray? Are they selfish and narcissistic, which needs to be worked on in therapy? Was it a bad relationship to begin with, and somebody was going to shake it up? Okay, which of the two is it, and what are you going to do about it? And the third phase is that, what are you going to do about it? It's transformation for the two partners and for the relationship itself, not just to survive an affair or any infidelity, but to use it as a springboard to deal with the issues you haven't been dealing with and turn it from a mediocre relationship into a great relationship. Use the crisis as a means of transformation.
It's fantastic.
Yeah. One quick follow-up, if you have the time. What do you find, that men or women are better able to really, truly get over an infidelity? Have you seen a difference between the sexes there?
It lands on them in slightly different ways. Men are more involved with the sexual aspect often, and women are more involved with the deceit and the betrayal. But I think it's equally damaging in different ways to different sexes. More important is culture. Latin Americans will be very jealous. You can murder somebody over sex, but they don't feel that they've been traumatized. They just feel that they've been betrayed. Americans will feel traumatized and want to get into therapy over it. And, you know, a lot of Europeans, it's like, well, what can I say? People are people. What's for lunch?
Thank you so much.
It's been great talking to you guys.
I really appreciate it. Again, we've been talking with Terry Real, The New Rules of Marriage. Thank you so much. Really appreciate
Terry.
You're welcome.
Bye-bye.
Great. Bye-bye.
Wow.
That was fun.
So cool. So I'm surprised about the two-thirds make it. Did you think that it was going to be that high after infidelity?
No.
Yeah. I
wonder if that was you think that's two-thirds of
his
clients, or his clients,
maybe,
he's helping them.
Exactly. Yeah. But
because
that is...
That's a brutally difficult thing to get over.
Oh, my God. That's so hard. But I love how he said culturally, because it's so true.
Yeah.
I mean, European, it's like, oh, yeah, he's got a mistress. Yeah. You know, but Americans is like, oh, my God. It's like trauma. And
Though I will say, in my experience working with couples, I have found that men have a much more difficult time getting over
it. Oh, really?
Because in general, the male ego is a little
gets in the way.
Also just a little less strong and resilient than the female ego.
Wow.
And so once that's broken with the man, I found that it's very difficult for them to regain the trust.
Sure.
You know, you can have a relationship that's crippled.
Right.
Like he said, in order to get it back to something even better is really, really tough.
Very tough.
One of the things I was going to ask him, I'd love to run it by you, was...
Sure.
You know, whether he had any suggestions or thoughts about the selection process. How do people actually decide who to marry?
Whole
question, because I think that's often the first big mistake,
the
big problem in a relationship, is it's either the right time, and so whoever is around, they marry, or this societal pressure, or the kid pressure, all these other things that come to play. And I think we could all learn
more about
how to pick a better spouse.
Sure.
And as you know, the second marriages have an even higher rate
of divorce
than first ones. They're like 60%.
Yeah,
so
exactly.
So we're clearly, as a society, not learning how to pick our spouse properly. And so I think we could all stand to benefit from that.
Well, I always tell especially my female clients, don't ignore those red flags. Like, I can't even tell you how many clients come in and they'll talk to me. And I'm like, and I'll point them out. I'll say, you know, does that seem a little odd to you that he's only calling you at 10 p.m.? You know, like, and she's like, well, you know, and I'm like, because to me, that's a red flag. Because that's not a guy who really wants a relationship with you. He wants to get laid, you know, and they'll be like, well, but, you know, he does talk about going out. And I'm like, okay, but there's a difference.
Right.
So I think the first thing is just, I think people get so stuck on, oh my gosh, I want someone, I'm so lonely, that they're willing to just ignore all of those red flags.
Yes, I so agree.
Yeah.
And even more agree that if they're red flags early.
Yes.
Right, if there's red flags in that first 6 months, when really almost everything should be easy and almost perfect.
Yes.
If you're actually seeing the red flags that you're inclined to ignore, we all have to train ourselves not to to just run for the hills. Because
yes.
if there are red flags early, those red flags are going to turn into red tsunamis.
Exactly.
You know?
Yeah.
And it's going to be a disaster.
Yeah. Well, and the other thing I tell people, too, is, like, it's okay to be picky, you know? Like, I feel like you need to be picky. You need to figure out who's right for you. And so I think a lot of people are like, well, maybe I'm too picky. Well, that's good. I want you to, you know, take your time in finding somebody. This is not a race. This is not a need to find somebody. I think where we get in trouble is when people aren't that picky and they're like, okay, well, I guess he'll be good enough, you know?
Yes.
She's
so
fine.
Agree.
Yeah.
I so agree.
Yeah.
Because as we've all been discussing, it's hard enough as it is to make a relationship
work.
Great and last
exactly.
for the long haul. If you're going
yes.
in with already compromising on some big issues, you know, then you're doomed.
Right.
You know,
absolutely.
I actually believe that for each of us, let's say there's 5 or 10 sort of must-haves, that we can't compromise on any of those 5 or 10 top things.
Yes.
The key things have to be there.
Yes.
And if you compromise, I think you're setting the stage for it to not work.
That's so true.
You know?
Yeah. Absolutely.
And of course, that sort of begets the question before that is that so many people don't even know what their 5 or 10 must-haves are.
I was thinking
you've
got
to know yourself.
Yep.
You've got to be comfortable in your own skin and be whole on your own in order to have, I think, a great relationship. And I think that's
so
another
too.
Thing that people don't do.
It's so funny because I'm actually writing a book right now about how you have to really understand you before you can find somebody else. I think so many people look to that person to fill. And then it's like, well, they're not needed, you know, they're not meeting those needs. But it's like, no, you need to work on your own stuff first and then, you know, figure it out.
Oh, that's great that you're writing that. Have you come up with a title yet?
It's so funny. I just thought about one. I don't know. It's a working title, but it might be... Take a seat, find a husband, something like that.
Oh, I like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, something like that.
That's great.
Yeah, because I see so many people, girls especially, suffer from that low self-esteem. Mm. I don't think men as often. I mean, they definitely can, but... And I think that they are really looking to that male, you know, to really fill them. And I think they get really disappointed or the issues are still there. And so I really want to work with the female clients, especially in sort of like, okay, listen, like you got you and, you know, you got to be okay with you. And then the other person's going to be okay with you. Because I think, you know, so many people, and I hear a lot like, oh, I found a great guy. Why am I running from him? Because I think you're scared that like you're not lovable because you're inside. You're thinking I'm not lovable, you know? So
yeah, I agree.
Yeah, there's a lot of work that needs to be done, you know, on the inside.
Right. And it gets back to what Terry was saying earlier about societally that we need to have courses from elementary school on to teach people.
I would
because it's not
love
rocket
that.
Science.
Right.
But yet, if you're not taught, you don't know.
I never
understood.
Yes.
We just have to start advocating each of us in our own way.
Sure.
You know, with schools or whatever to get these courses put in place.
Well, so
if you think about it, there's courses on almost everything else.
Well, it's funny. As you're talking, I'm thinking like in high school, like, did I really need to take like trigonometry? Like, you know, like I would rather take a course on relationships. And I mean, because that's going to affect me the rest of my life, or balancing a checkbook.
Right.
I mean, things that are so basic. I feel like,
absolutely. In fact, my high school, which was a long time ago, actually had what they called a general business class.
Oh, they did?
And it was the best class that I ever took in high school. And basically, it taught us how to write a check.
Yes.
How to balance our bank account. How to get a mortgage.
That's
how to get a lease.
No
like,
way.
All those things that otherwise I would never have known. Well, we should have a general relationships class.
Yes, 100%.
Simple, basic stuff to start reinforcing those key elements. Because, it's not rocket science.
Exactly.
If we start that elementary, junior high, high school, college.
Yes.
We would improve...
the community, especially now with all the teens texting and they're looking down and they're like, yeah, I mean, we need it more than ever.
More than ever.
Yeah.
More than ever. And they would have really profound societal impact.
Yes.
You know, divorces are very costly economically, not to mention emotionally.
Yes.
Right? And, it would have such great consequences. If we could move the divorce rate from 50 even to 45 or 40, it would have gigantic consequences.
Exactly.
And I think implementing courses like that, as well as encouraging earlier therapy.
Sure.
Not when it's deep in crisis. Get into therapy earlier.
Yes.
You combine the courses with the therapy. That those two simple ideas alone would have a gigantic change.
Yeah.
And getting people to read things like the book you're reading, the books that Terry's reading, my books.
You know, exactly.
Things that are relatively quick reads that really have those basics.
Of course.
To reinforce, hopefully, that course structure that we desperately need to put in place.
Well, I mean, he's right. I think we all grow up not really having the appropriate models. So it's almost like we all kind of have to learn this from scratch, you know, and there's no shame in that.
Right.
It's like, okay, how can we be better communicators? How can we be better in relationships?
And especially those of us that are children of people in that generation that got married in the 50s and
60s. Oh, yes.
That generation, you know, they endured marriages that were deeply unhappy and just didn't deal with it at all.
Wow.
Right? At least now, like the millennials and the X-Gens, they're much more communicative. Yes, they're deep addicted to their smartphones, but they're much more demanding of a great relationship. They're much less willing to put up with a terrible relationship.
Yeah,
that makes
sense.
We've moved in that sense.
That's good.
But still, there's a long way to go because the divorce rate hasn't dropped.
Wow,
even
so
with that generation.
Well, do you feel like also the new generation, like they're very easy to, if things don't work out, they're quick to just get out of it too?
A little bit more quick to get out, no doubt. And they're also much less likely to get married early. Like they're waiting and they're saying, you know what, there's no rush.
Which
I think is a good thing.
I agree. I totally agree also.
Right. The problem is there's no real change in the divorce rate with late marriages versus early marriages.
Oh, really?
No.
That's very
fascinating. Yeah, they're just delaying it now.
Wow, that's interesting.
Because there's the lack of the courses, there's the lack of the education.
Mm-hmm.
So they're still going into a marriage like what
Right,
was saying,
with the same problems,
That the analytical ability to really, and commitment to what is critical to keep the relationship together.
Sure, wow. All right, we're going to pause for a moment, a little break from our sponsor.
Are you frustrated by the tremendous challenges that so many millions of people face in your dating life? If you are, we have your solution. Come talk to me, Ian Oliver, author of best-selling book Getting Back on Top, and my website, secondchanceatromance.com. We can help you. And remember, all of the profits from our activities go to two very important children-related charities, so it's all going to a great cause, helping you and helping them.
What a great sponsor.
Amazing.
So we have guest host today, Ian Oliver. He's the author of Getting Back on Top, and we're talking about relationships. Wow, really, really cool stuff. Yeah, I mean, it is kind of interesting too, because like I have a babysitter. She's like in her 20s. She's a millennial. And she's kind of like not really, you know, she says like people don't really date. They just like hang out. It's so different. It's like so weird.
Radically different. And the whole hooking up culture.
Yes.
Right? Where they don't really date. They don't really have relationships, but they do get together sexually.
Yes.
That's a new phenomenon.
Wow. Well, I mean, and I'm all for obviously like female empowerment. Go for it. But like, you know, I think there are some women out there who really do want to sort of, you know, have a family, have a relationship, and it's like they're going about it the wrong way. You know, it's like it's going to be difficult to sort of to have like that intimate relationship. I think if you start off so intimate sexually, like it's kind of hard to build from there, my opinion. So
yeah, no, I agree totally. Agree totally. But it is definitely a big shift from, you know, like when we were in school. Like that's sort of the norm now.
So
rather
strange.
Than people sort of having girlfriend boyfriend.
And they text. They don't even talk on the phone. I mean, this is so weird to me. Like I mean, I just remember talking to boys on my phone and like my bed, and like I just can't imagine texting, because it's like it's hard to read emotion, you know. So it's like if they say something, does that mean this or does that mean that? And it's like I feel like it adds another layer of disconnect, because you're not even hearing the tone, you're not even, you know, hearing the personality.
I totally agree.
Yeah.
I think anything substantial that's dealt with through text lends itself to tremendous miscommunication.
My husband always says that to me. He's like, if you have something important to say, you don't say it on text. You
agree.
You I mean, obviously the best is in person. Next best is phone.
Yeah.
Least is text. I mean, text is really, in my opinion, for like, okay, I'll meet you at, you know, I'll meet you at Starbucks in 10. You know,
for that
like
kind of stuff, it's great.
Yes.
Or, you know, I'm running a little late,
of
or I'm
course.
Thinking about you.
Or like a one liner.
It's great.
Oh my God, but I have clients who will like literally texts me like a diatribe, like, I'm so upset. And I'm like, let's talk by phone. Like, I'm not going to engage in like a text conversation, you know?
Yeah, it's really tough. I think it's a very, very dangerous habit.
Yes.
Yeah. But that generation.
I know they don't know anything
else. This phone thing.
Yes.
You know?
Well, this is funny. Like, I will call my babysitter, and she's like so awkward on the phone. She'll be like, hello? Like, it's like so weird, you know?
I know. It's funny, though, but, you know, you can't really fight it because, like, with my kids are now 21 and 18, but when they were like between 14 and 18, I tried really, really hard, like, after I got divorced. So they were with my ex-wife.
Yeah.
So when I wasn't with them, I wanted to talk to them on the phone.
And they
I tried for like a whole year to like institute a regular phone.
They were not
absolutely
into it.
Couldn't do it.
Wow.
And so then I deferred to texting.
Yes.
And now we text and have ever since like
that makes
crazy.
Sense.
So at least we have some kind of substantial interaction.
Yes.
But they just were not oriented to the phone because, like you were saying, their generation just
they're
doesn't
just not
talk
used
on the phone.
To that. What about FaceTime? Would they be open to that?
Somewhat, but
not so much.
Not
yeah.
as much.
Yeah.
Not as much.
Like, I guess my kids are younger, but they're very into FaceTime because it's sort of exciting and it's like, you know, interactive. But
it'll be interesting to see when they become teenagers whether that stays or not.
Well, I'm hoping it will because I think you're right. I mean, I think you are absolutely in the majority. Like most teens do not talk on the phone.
No.
That's so funny. Unbelievable. Wow.
And who knows what's next, right? I mean, we know that the technology is going to keep evolving.
Sure.
So
that
God
scares
knows
me.
What's next. You know,
I know. Like, it really scares me.
Holographic we're not even stuff or God knows what.
Well, I don't know. Did you ever see that movie, Her? It's with...
Yes, I did.
That was fantastic.
It was very good.
It really, like, gave me chills because I could see that happening.
Yeah.
And, you know, basically, for those of you who didn't see it, it was about this guy who basically falls in love with a computer.
Right.
And
his operating system.
Yeah, exactly. Like a Siri.
But she looked much better than
Siri.
Yeah,
exactly. And she and he, like, falls in love with her. And you know, she's obviously not real, but she's so realistic. And he really, you know, falls in love with her. And it's just absolutely, it was one of my favorite movies,
actually.
Yeah,
it was a good one.
I think that
kind of thing is happening where, virtual reality stuff,
yes,
and holographic stuff.
Oh my
God!
God
knows what else. It's going to morph into that.
Well, it is terrifying.
It's going to be terrifying. It's going to be a real big issue.
Oh my God! My husband works at one of the toy companies, and I put on that virtual reality. I'd never done it.
The most like the recent version.
Oh my God! And I walked out of there, and it freaked me out.
So it seemed so real.
It was so real. I mean, it was almost like uncanny. Yeah, it's amazing. Like I had felt like I was gone for 2 hours somewhere else. You know?
Wow.
Yeah. But that's scary to me.
That is scary. I mean, because it's only going to get more real.
Exactly.
Right? I mean, and if you look at some of the science fiction movies, you know, like in Star Trek, the holodeck, you know, they can have like sexual experiences.
Yes, I was thinking that. Yes,
holographic people.
Exactly.
I think that's coming.
That's absolutely.
God knows what we're going to do with that.
I know, exactly.
at least all the therapists will have even that much more.
Exactly, to deal with. I'll be in a job for a while.
You've got really good job security, you know? But, you know, we got driverless cars coming. We got massive technology stuff coming.
Wow.
It's going to test all of us in terms of our maintaining the human connection.
Yes.
I mean, that's really the challenge.
Sure.
How do we do that in an increasingly challenging
tech world? Yeah.
Yeah.
Unbelievable. We had such a great show today. So where can people find you and your website and book and all that
stuff? Oh, thank you. So my website is secondchanceatromance.com. And all my articles and interviews and my book, Getting Back on Top, is accessible there. So thank you for asking about that.
Yeah.
I'm also working on a second book that's going to deal with a lot of the topics that
we're talking about today.
Which is really basically how as a society and how as an individual can we make marriage better.
Uh-huh.
So it actually ties into a lot of the stuff that Terry was talking to. So I want to reinforce some of these ideas in that. So it'll probably come out next year sometime, towards the end of the year.
Oh, that's great.
So
cool. Well, we'll have you on about that.
Thank you. I would love that very much.
Cool. So, and in case you missed this show or you want to recap, you can listen to us on our podcast on iTunes. Next week, we're going to have Merle Bombardier. I hope I said that right. And it's the baby decision, which I think will be really cool. Talk about, you know, whether or not... If you're on the fence about having a baby, and now that I've like, I'm just enduring so much, I'm like, oh my God, don't do it now. you can visit us.
It gets better.
Yeah, exactly. It does. And I feel like I'm kind of getting there. Like now that my son is 4 today, my younger one, I'm like, okay, I can breathe a little bit. We're getting there. You can visit us on our website, docandtherapist.com. You can send us emails anytime, docandtherapist@gmail.com, if you're still emailing. and add us on Twitter, @DocTherapist1. Thank you so much for listening. Thank you, Terry Real, The New Rules of Marriage. Thanks so much. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
You're listening to the Dr. Deborah and Therapist Kelly Show, only on LA Talk Radio.